And to start off the day, we welcome Jim Leifer, Director of Broadcast Operations and Engineering at American Tower. Jim.
I have my coffee, so, and I will use it often. Good morning, everybody. Happy 8 a.m. So I figured I'd start off by saying, take a sip of your coffee. I'm going to go through some stuff that's typical. A lot of it's evergreen. But for any of the folks that are now being thrown into going to the transmitter site, this might be some stuff that you thought about. Maybe it was a good idea, but you haven't implemented. But the other thing is we oversee over 500 broadcast towers in the U.S. So one of the neat perspectives that we get is we get to see a lot of your all's installs. So we see some amazing installations and some cool ideas. So I thought I would just kind of share those with you today. And then we'll kind of walk through just some of the stuff that we see at tower sites that are good and some things that people aren't doing that they used to do. And then maybe you guys can incorporate that into your site visits, or if you're a regional person and you go to multiple sites, things that, you know, kind of can impact the operation. I mean, at the end of the day, we've got to stay on the air. So in the 5 years I've been with American Tower, we've seen a lot of transition. A lot of folks are into new roles. So, and a lot of people that were local to one station are now doing regional stuff. And then there's still some guys that are just doing the local stuff. So we'll kind of walk through that stuff. But I wanted to just start it off saying repack is over. The picture on the screen is one of the helicopter picks, which is kind of new to broadcast. We really didn't do too many of those. But American Tower did 60 picks during repack, where we had to go through a lot of information in order to safely remove and install new antenna systems, both master antenna systems and single frequency antennas. And we kind of went through just a whole litany of stuff, which is some of the other details that we used to take care of, and now it's kind of become a secondary thought. Or if folks have left the company, there's a lot of intellectual knowledge that is now nowhere to be found. So I'll kind of walk through some of those things with you guys. So that's kind of the housekeeping stuff. We'll walk through just the day-to-day stuff. I'm not going to go by the slides directly because this is more of an interactive conversation with you folks. So we'll just kind of work through that. But I'll just kind of move forward with here. I'll have to put my glasses on so I can see. Time for a sipping of the coffee. All right. So one of the issues that's coming up is because people aren't visiting the sites as frequently as possible, there's also some safety and security issues, some ideas to deter, distract, or make the sites less desirable for a naughty person to come to the site and do things. And then just the other stuff that we kind of talked about. So the first one I want to kind of hit is clean the site. Just because we got rid of high voltage doesn't mean that we don't ever have to change the filters in the transmitter or the ancillary equipment. You know, do we still test the SR1? You know, if we have water-cooled loads, do we rotate the motors on a preventive maintenance schedule? Some people say yes. Some people are very diligent, and they do a very good job of it. But with everything, with more and more being asked of us, this is usually the first thing that we see start to decay. Start to see dust on the transmitters, dust on the equipment, air filters not getting changed out. We had one broadcaster call us up saying that there was a problem with the pressure in the building because his transmitter kept cycling off. Pulled out the air filter, and the airflow sensor now worked fine. Transmitter worked fine, but about every 15 minutes it would shut off. So he pulled the air filter out, and we went back to the site a few months later. He had never replaced it because he was just too busy. I mean, these are just the real-world things that really happen. So now all that dirt is now in the transmitter. Will he ever clean it, or is he going to wait for the next failure? So, but we also notice, on the other hand, the folks that take the time and are diligent about this stuff, the rate of failure is decreased. You know, everyone always used to say a clean transmitter is a happy transmitter. You know, mopping the floors and cleaning everything, that used to be a thing. So, and some folks still do, but a lot have stopped. So we found, by looking at everybody's sites, that this seems to be, you know, kind of roaring its head up a little bit more, that a cause of the failure was, oh, the transmitter wasn't clean, or there was something that prevented it. And a lot of times it's the air filters on the back of the transmitters, even those little ones, the muffin fans, they'll overheat and spin down. So, and the other part was the HVAC. We have a lot of folks that they're like, well, I just had a call from somebody last week. They said, how often do you guys do HVAC maintenance? And, you know, for American Tower, we do it quarterly. They do it quarterly? And it was like, yeah, we change the filters every 90 days, period. So you have to do it. It's $15 for a filter. But at the same time, the mechanic will check the air filters. He'll check the fan belts. He'll do a gas test. And then they'll provide us with that information so we can tell if a unit is starting to get to end of life or if it's got an issue, it's got a leak. You know, again, the whole goal in it is no downtime. So changing the air filters, while it might be a $100 service call for the HVAC mechanic, that's better than a break fix. The room's 120 degrees, we're off the air, we're on a backup if we have one. You know, I could have saved the station, and this is evergreen, it doesn't matter if it's AM, FM, or TV. I could have kept the station on if I would have just spent the 10 minutes to cut the guy a PO. But these are just some real world stuff, and you can extrapolate that into some other stuff as well. The other thing that we've noticed is we've had an issue with the lead times. So generators, everybody loves a great generator. 36 weeks from date of PO. That's the reality of today. From about 100 kilowatt generator and up, it's about 36 weeks. So HVAC is 12 to 18 weeks, depending on the brand and the size of the air conditioner. So as you make your plans, understand that if you have a major failure, evaporator coils are shredded, right? They fail. Your recommendation is to replace it. What are you going to do for those 6 to 8 weeks? So these are real-world examples where, you know, we've had sites where we've had to put in temporary cooling because the manufacturers just don't have that equipment that's available. So as and this is nationwide, but unless you know somebody that's really well-connected either for the generator stuff or for HVAC, if you're going to replace that unit, just make sure you build that into your plan that it could be an extended outage. As you make your plans, maybe you say, you know, that air conditioner is 15 years old. Maybe in 2023, I plan to replace it in Q2 when things start to warm up. Maybe you got to cut the PO in January so they can get the equipment in time. So it's not one of those things where you call the guy and 10 days later it's installed. That's not happening right now. And from all of our vendors, they don't see it getting it, you know, the supply getting built back up because as soon as it's coming in, it's being consumed. So, and that's just a real, and you can extrapolate that down to all kinds of different stuff, but these are two serious areas where we were going to replace a couple generators and HVACs, and, you know, the lead times are just, you know, exhausting, and there's nothing you can do about it. That's just where we are in today's environment. So let's talk about some security. We had a broadcaster install some cameras at the tower site. This is a naughty person. This person did break into the site, and he stole some of the guy's equipment, some of the broadcaster's equipment. But I put it all on the screen for you to explain one thing. If you do put cameras out there, get real cameras. Okay, can you see his license plate? Yeah, the sheriff couldn't see it either. You can make out his face? No, you can't really make out his face too well. You know it's an SUV. They did end up catching the guy, by the way. So they said, oh, well, we've got cameras on the site. And when they went back and looked at the video camera, this is what they captured. We zoomed in a little bit. You really can't tell much about the guy, right? I mean, the camera just wasn't a very good quality. So here's a couple tricks that we talked with this broadcaster several times, and we talked with some other folks. They have good cameras, 4K cameras, something that can do stuff at night, right? It's got the night backlit. But they have really good, high-quality cameras that are higher than what a broomstick could get to, right? So you don't want it to be on a broomstick because they'll whack it. They'll also come up with a hoodie or a face mask, so you won't get them. But what we've said and what a couple of folks have done is they put dummy cameras, a little blinking LED. So they'll go whack that camera, and they think they're scot-free. they'll put a second or a third camera in an interior location, you know, so the guy has now penetrated the building, and now you've got him with the hoodie back or with the face mask down, and you can catch him that way. So, you know, allow that person to take the, and you can get those cameras off of, you know, online for $20, the little fake ones. Well, he said, you know, let them see it and let them go ahead and attack the bad camera. But then on the secondary front, you have some really good cameras at face level. The other thing is they have trail cams. Stick one out near your gates where you can get the license plate. The license plate would have helped in this case quite a bit. I say, fortunately, this guy hit several different towers, not just an American Tower site, and not just that one broadcaster. But they were able to finally catch him. But then he got released, and now he's on the run. But he's not back at this area. So, but he is wanted by he's like one of the most wanted people in one of the states. I won't say where, but it's just one of those things that, you know, look, put barriers. Another instance that we suggested was think of it like an onion. There's layers. Build multiple layers. Good fence, good lock, lighting, sirens. Most tower sites are remote. Sirens are, you know, you can put them in, but most of the time people aren't going to hear it. Alarm systems can be good, as long as the copper is good, so you can get back to the alarm company. But now that's kind of going away, so, you know, you have to have some other means to get out there, so you wireless connection point back to the security company. Keep bars across doors. That can be a fire issue if someone needs to escape, so that doesn't always work. You have to kind of work with the different architectural folks to come up with make it as difficult as possible for those guys, because a crowbar can rip apart most any double door. Right, so you gotta say, okay, how can I allow myself to replace my equipment but yet secure the facility enough so I don't have to worry about this guy coming in to steal copper, tools. This guy was into stealing everyone's hand tools. So he stole like $50,000 in hand tools. They had a craftsman roll around thing. He helped himself to that and didn't steal a lot of copper, and he didn't damage the transmitters or anything. But I guess he was just getting whatever he could get to go pawn. And he hit four or five sites in an area. So those are the things that's like, okay, how can I add layers of defense that aren't too expensive, but just make it so undesirable that a guy like this just won't come there anymore? So, you know, that's one thing we can do for the security stuff. And the other thing is to work with the other folks. You know, we all work together at sites. If you see something, you got to kind of say, hey, man, I noticed that back door was jimmied. Why did you leave it open? And, you know, a lot of times we'll go to sites and we'll see doors open. Guy forgot to deadbolt it. Take the extra 10 seconds, double check all the locks. And this isn't just for American Tower sites. I'm kind of doing this evergreen because a lot of you guys have your own towers. It just takes some common sense to help prevent this guy from coming to one of your sites. So one of the things that we, American Tower, we have a lot of master antenna systems and we have a lot of complex sites. One of the things that we noticed through Repack was that the data at the sites was okay, but some of the sites were built in the 80s and the 70s, some of them in the 90s. But to get the data to the folks that needed it was a little bit cumbersome. You know, a lot of the stuff was on blueprints, so they have to get converted to something in today's world, right? So, and the helicopter guys and the guys that are running gin poles and the ones that the PEs that are stamping the drawings for the climbing process, they have to understand all the details about a tower site. So what I'm suggesting is get the data and get it into some kind of a central location. You know, we all have 10 different ways of doing it, but at the end of the day, if you have to replace your antenna, your line, and any of the stuff that requires rigging, in order for them to do a proper rigging plan and for the folks that climb the tower to be safe, they need all kinds of really intricate data. The helicopter folks would have what they call a peer review. They'll have a PE sign off on a rigging plan, and then they'll have another PE check his math, check the checker, right? So that way there is no mistakes. Like I said, we did a lot of picks, and we had to go through this every time. And what we found was we were pretty good, but we weren't as good as we needed to be. So we stopped and said, okay, we need to get all the information collected into a central spot. And then that way, when these folks ask for the details, we have real data for them. And a lot of times these towers have been modified. Do you have the mods? Do you know what the mods were? I mean, then, you know, you don't have to be a PE to say, okay, well, we had three mods to the tower. The latest one is here, but a PE will want to look at all of them to make sure that the cross members were, you know, up to the today's standards. So it might have been Rev C, and we're already in H now, right? So your tower may be overloaded. Now, this may not happen, but as you go through different events, it's nice to know that the tower is up to the latest standards just for, you know, weather events. And we'll get into that in a little bit, too. But, you know, there's a lot of things that can happen that ice, you know, obviously ice is a thing here. You know, 1-inch radial ice in Rev C is one standard, but in G and H, it's a whole different standard, and the tower may not be sufficient. So again, prevent yourself from having an off-air experience, collect the data, understand it, and then that way you can prevent that potential off-air occurrence. We went through and we did all of the data on our towers, and we do it on a pretty regular basis. We've documented everything that we can, and I would suggest that might be a good opportunity for you folks, especially the new folks that have come in, and you've now have towers that are under your belt and you're responsible for. Collect the data, get it into a central spot, so that way when someone asks you for the latest tower inspection or the latest a mod that you did to the tower, you'll have that information so they can run their mathematics on it. So that way you don't have to worry that, oh, I've got to go out to the tower site and grab the blueprints. If it was an old Klein from 1982 and I don't know who did mods. I mean, these are real world things. We've had to have folks go out to our towers that we've acquired and do new top-to-bottom examinations of the towers so we could understand what that tower could withstand. Because a lot of times some of the towers weren't up to speed. So then it's like, okay, how much money is it going to cost us to get it up to the latest revision? So, you know, these are real things. And we've had several icing events and hurricanes and other events. And it's important to know that when you have an asset that's worth that much money, that it's protected and it's up to the latest standards, and that 1 inch of radial ice isn't going to make the tower come down. Or 100 mile an hour straight line wind isn't going to pull up the guy wires. So, you know, or that has somebody inspected the porcelain or the ceramic insulator on the AM site? I mean, you know, you can kind of transition this into all the different medias. But these are real things. A lot of times you get a cracked base insulator. Nobody really looks at it. When was the last time anyone looked at it? You should look at it. Make sure that it's not cracked, because if it cracks and you get a straight line wind, you got a tower that's now making a banana. And you're going to have to cut it down, and you've just spent $100,000 of the boss's money. So if you'd have been proactive, you could probably prevent that. So lots of little details in all of this stuff. So our thought was is document everything. And everybody has a different way of documenting. And I'm not here to say PDFs are the end-all, be-all. Whatever format works for your companies, that's fine. But just have it in your back pocket. And then as you make changes, just put it into an archive, the old stuff, and then you have the fresh stuff. Regardless of who takes your job, or if you move to another spot, or you all of a sudden get new spots, you'll have that information so you can be effective and be able to understand what the next big thing could be. So, you know, we kind of walked into this. One of the things at American Tower that we're doing in the broadcast space is we're now starting to fly drones at our tower sites. Drones are great. They do videos, and you can look at the neighbor's backyard and all that kind of stuff. But what we're doing with it is we're taking high-image photographs, thousands of them, on the towers, to the point where our engineering teams can get down to inside of 1 inch accuracy of a rad center, of a bolt, cross members. And then we put it in what they call a point cloud map. They stitch together all the 1,000 photos, and the top picture is the 1,000 photos. It kind of looks a little chunky, but it's all pixelized. And then you can zoom in and look exactly at one specific picture if that's what you want to do. This is great for spring hangers. I'll give you an example. In Tampa, about 2 months ago, we did an examination of a tower. We found 37 spring hangers of one of our clients that the spring hangers were not sprung properly. or they were defective. Well, they got it fixed, and what happened the week later? The hurricane came. Boy, weren't they happy. Can you imagine how much 1,850 feet of 6-inch coax would have cost them? And plus, again, now, they're off the air again. So one of the first phone calls we had was, thank you for getting us that information. We were able to get a tower crew to repair that, and there were 37 of them that were defective. They were just old. They were about 20 years old, and they replaced them all, and they had no issues. So the little things, you know, we prevented them from spending, I guess we have to ask Dielectric what the cost of 20-inch line sections are these days, but that would not have been a cheap fix. And they would have been off the air post-emergency for quite a while, which then affects their ability to generate ratings and revenue. So they didn't have that problem, and it was averted because we took the initiative and said, let's be proactive about this instead of reactive. So our whole goal in it was is for us to understand the tower structure, but the unintended consequence was is that the broadcasters that happened to be on that tower, we found some deficiencies and we shared it with them. Said, hey, you guys should get these fixed. Well, they did. They take it serious too, and they were very proactive, and they got it fixed within about 2 weeks. And we didn't know that the hurricane was coming. And now we look back and it was like, phew, got that one good. You know, so, but the same thing can happen with ice storms and all tornadoes, and you can throw in whatever event you want. But we've now collected this information, and we'll continue to collect them on all of our sites. And, you know, I'm agnostic about who you're going to use or what you're going to use for your sites, but that data can become quite helpful when you have a rusting situation. The tower's aging. Is it surface rust, or is it rust that's actually compromising the tower structure? The last thing you want is one of these big boys to come down. This was an 1,800-foot tower. You don't want it to come down because to replace it is going to be a year and hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not longer, and if not more money. So, you know, it's just, you know, and it doesn't matter if it's insured. You have to, your insurance folks will love you because you'll have accurate data to go back to those folks and the risk management folks and say, well, funny we mentioned that. We just had a tower inspection. And it passed all of its codes. The tower still came down. That's unfortunate. But we were compliant with all the normal rules and regulations. Therefore, the insurance claim is valid. So this is a business side of the broadcast space. That's important. If you don't have that stuff, they could deny the claim. Prove to us that this tower was in proper shape before. So these are little tips and tricks that might help you avert that. All goes back to documentation and taking the time when you go to the site. Not just to look at, oh yeah, we're at 100%, yeah, the reflected looks good, air conditioner's blowing, I'm good, I'm out of here. Now take the time, start building this inventory of data, because either you or somebody else will have to come in if you're not available. They need to understand what they're getting into when they go to a site. So this is an interesting one. As we all are now reaching out to electricians and different vendors, HVAC guy said, well, gee, I got 2 3-pole breakers on the panel. The panel's not labeled. I mean, you know, most of our panels are not labeled. We just know that breaker 13 is X and breaker 26 is Y. Well, guess what? One was the air conditioner, the other one was the elevator control. Which one do you think he flipped? He got the elevator. So the elevator shut with people on it, and the air conditioning guy said, the breakers don't work, I'm leaving. So he left the site. The guys had to climb down. So that was one of those where it was like, oh yeah, maybe we should label those breakers. But then the other thing is, and this was feedback we got from the HVAC mechanic, he said, if you had told me which breaker it was, which is just a small picture on an iPhone with an arrow like we show there, I said, look, this is the breaker to that air conditioner. This is the breaker to that air conditioner. You eliminate the mistake. But you have the data to tell them. Again, it all goes back to that data thing. I know it's a mundane thing, but it is a reoccurring thing, and it's a real thing. I mean, these things do happen. So it's just taking the time to do the stuff that our predecessors taught us, that when we went to the tower sites, you did these things. You had it, but they also had a lot larger staffs. But we still are required to do these things, right? It's important to do those details. Same thing with the generators. We had sites with multiple generators. We gave one of our customers the best oil change in service known to man because he serviced the wrong generator. So we had to come back out and do the right generator. Document everything. Now, obviously, EPA is involved in this, so because it's probably diesel or propane. You have to do annual inspections in a lot of states for certification. Usually it has to be written, and it has to be available at the site. Most folks are pretty good about that. Some folks, not so much. But, you know, that's obviously a state-regulated thing. So, you know, there's no reason why you can't snapshot those things, get them back to the office, archive them, so when the next guy that walks out to the site, he knows that it's a 300-kilowatt cat. I think this one's a cat. And, you know, it uses this kind of oil, and it has this many hours on it. So when you go out there, oh, it ran for 60 hours. Did I know about it? You know, how much fuel is left in the tank? Do you remote monitor it? Now, this is back where you go into the whole thing. It's like, well, I know the generator's good for 40 hours with my transmitter on, running air conditioners. Yeah, I'm probably good for about 2.5, 3 days. Well, when the generator spins up, do you have a means by which to understand that? You know, do you have a remote monitoring that says generator's running? Does it let you know? Because the last thing you want to do is get caught running low on fuel after an event. We had that last week. We had folks calling us asking us if they could get diesel. Believe it or not, some major broadcasters did not have agreements with diesel providers post-hurricane storm. We were able to get them fuel, and we worked with them. But they were down. One guy had 199 gallons in a 200-gallon tank. That's how much he filled it up. He was down to his day tank before he got fuel after the storm. And, you know, that's a real thing. He didn't know when it started. He didn't know how long it ran. But the other thing he didn't know is he didn't know what his consumption was. So did it burn 2 gallons an hour or 20 gallons an hour? He didn't know. We got him fuel. He stayed on the air. They're back on shore power now. The crisis was averted. But if he would have had some of those details, he could have been a little bit more proactive instead of reactive to the solution. So one of the other things I like to, you know, what are you prepared to do, you know, if there's a fire or ice? This was a station in Miami. Surge came down the line, blew the meter off. Well, guess what? Supply chain issues. The power company didn't have any new meters for him. So he's down. And there, you know, of course, you have to get an electrician out there to replace the box. The box is backordered because of supply chain issues. They just got back on a couple days ago. But, you know, what do you do when your main site goes down? You know, obviously, you know, we talked yesterday a lot about having stuff in the cloud and having fiber to the tower site and you know, all the different opportunities. But what about the backup site? You know, these are the, if you had to go to your backup site for 2 weeks, what could you do? What would you do? What if you don't have a backup site? You know, what are the options that you can give to your management to tell them? It's like, look, a viable backup will give you this. It won't give you that. So maybe your coverage is reduced, but you're still on. Well, maybe I hit the cable head ends, and that's good enough. But, you know, there's a lot of cord cutters out there. So when people go off the air, the phone does start ringing again. So, you know, what's important? Does it meet the financial models and the business model to have a backup site? Because inevitably, there's going to be a power surge, and it's going to blow the meter off, and now you've got an issue where the site's going to be down through no fault of your own for an extended period of time. They had to pull the power, but because the power was pulled, this guy did not have a backup generator. But he did have a backup site. He operated about 50% power for about 2 or 3 weeks. Last week, towards the end of last week, they finally got the can in place, and the power company came out and replaced the meter. So the other half of the slide is an ice event. Ice hit the building, penetrated the roof, water in the building. Now you've got an exposed openings. You know, water is probably one of the worst things that can happen to a tower site or a transmitter room because it will find the most exclusive power supply and short it out. So, and of course, everyone's out of stock on the power supplies. So, and you can't put a blue tarp over your transmitter because it just doesn't seem to like that much. So, and all the, you could have a roadie or a Nautel or whatever. Water in the transmitter equals bad day. So, you know, what do you do when those things happen? So these are the things that, you know, what's your backup plan? So those are the things that we wanted to kind of talk about and understand that, you know, try to start developing these backup plans so that way when this does happen, you're prepared for it and then you can execute on it. You know, I was talking to somebody earlier today and I said, you know, engineers are great thinkers and we come up with some amazing solutions, but it's hard to get that great solution from the back room to the boardroom, right? And that's our job is to, yeah, exactly. So that's our job is to be able to understand what the risk is, explain it to management in management speak, and come up with something that's viable to keep the facility on. This goes for studios, and it doesn't have to be transmitters, but it can be anything. What happens when the UPS goes bye-bye? Why do we buy the cheap UPSs that when the batteries start to freak out, they lock out, and it requires a human to go to the site to hit the, you know, to bypass the plugs on the essential equipment? Why didn't we buy the better one that automatically bypassed itself when it lost its mind? Oh, it's $300 more. Well, was that $300 worth you being off the air? These are the things that we have to communicate to our leadership to understand these things. So I gave this demonstration a couple weeks ago. This was Hurricane Ivan. This was a tower site in Fort Myers. And we had security cameras there. And you can see where it flooded the parking lot pretty well. This was a storm surge. This wasn't a wind event for this site. The water did get into the building. And it did flood the building with about 2 feet of water. And let's see if I have the video.
Speaking about that earlier here today, saying they do have more than 40,000 personnel ready to restore power. Of course, though.
So it did take about 2 days for the water to recede. So there were multiple broadcasters in this site. They were in a combined, this was an FM site. It had three FMs. It had the local county office of emergency management's two-way system in the building, as well as a couple of wireless carriers. So of course the wireless carriers went down, their generators got swamped, so they shut down. The broadcasters, all of their transmitters got soaked, right? Because it went up about 2.5-3 feet. So anything that's in the bottom, and I think there were Nautels and a couple of the other brand names, and they all got wet. But the good news is we got the building got cleaned out really nice. So, and I do want to tell you that a Shively combiner floats. So that was one floating away. So that's just a security camera that we had there. So those are actually two FM combiners. And they did float, and they floated down the about a couple hundred feet. So just out of camera view. So, you know, what do you prepare for that? You know, the guys in Florida prepare for that, right? Kevin Trueblood, who used to be up here, he's down there now. He's been on Facebook talking about all the crazy stuff. But, you know, this is one of those things that's like, okay, what do I do now? Okay, I'm off, and I'm not coming back up for any time in the near future. What's my backup plan? So these are the rhetorical questions that I'm just kind of throwing out to you folks. It's like, you know, bad things happen, and it's unfortunate. The good news is that the broadcast generator that provided power to the building was at 36 inches. They had 32 inches of storm surge. The generator did not get swamped. The electrics were just above the water line. So once the water receded and we were able to get out to the site safely, they turned the generator on, killed all the power, had an electrician go out and inspect everything. The electrician said, okay, we can turn these air conditioners on. They fired up the air conditioners, they came on. So they had 15 tons of air conditioning and they were able to get the building dried out, actually pretty fast. Surprisingly enough, the floor was actually pretty clean. And now they're doing the restoration process. Right, so now they've got transmitters on trucks and combiners on trucks, and they're going to restore. They did have some backup facilities. Well, I think one of the broadcasters is still off. They had a little brick, and they were trying to figure out where they were going to stick the brick. But the building survived, and then, you know, not to blow anyone's horn, but we had done a TIA on the tower. We had made sure that everybody's stuff, as well as our tower, survived the storm, and the tower had no no damage that we're aware of. We'll go back and do a post-storm inspection, obviously, as well, because we want to make sure all the coaxes are still set and that there are no butterflies and those kind of things that could have caught any coax free, and check the structure itself. But these are the things that you guys got to have to plan for. And so, you know, that's the thing, is what was their plan B? I kind of told you what they did. Two of the three broadcasters had a backup plan, and they're now executing on that. You know what they haven't lost? Revenue. You know what they haven't lost? Ratings. And they're serving their community the way they're supposed to be. And they're not on the FCC list of the 15 stations that were off. There were a couple AMs that came down because of the lack of maintenance. You know, when they showed, I saw a couple pictures where the guy wires were pulled out. And we were talking about the galvanic stuff yesterday. It was all completely rusted through. Very acidic environment. A lot of salt in the ground. It's a lot of sand. Those towers didn't have a chance. Were they properly maintained? Probably not. So they're off. And, you know, to replace three AM towers in a hurricane zone post-storm, you know, how long is that going to take? And with the challenges that AMs have, that's a real thing, right? Are they going to be able to restore their service to any extent? How much ratings are they going to lose? Will their audience ever come back? You know, we're in the job to save the audiences and make it available, especially during an emergency, because, of course, cable goes out. That's the first thing that fails. You know, we're the beacon to tell people where to go get emergency supplies or whatever it is. Kind of forget that from time to time, but at the end of the day, we're there to serve the community. So having a plan B can be helpful for us so we can sleep at nights, but it can also be financially responsible to our management so that, yeah, we're at 50% power, but we're still billing, and it's still a good thing. We're on the air, we're making revenue, we're serving our community, and nobody knows what's happening behind the curtain. One of the other things that we do is we monitor stuff. And for some of you folks that are at an American Tower site, you probably will see these, but I'll kind of walk through it. And again, agnostic on all the stuff. There's 100 different good remote control systems out there. But we'll have multiple stations at tower sites, and we'll put them into a master antenna, TV, radio, FM, not a big deal. We can monitor them both, but we monitor them and then save the information up in the cloud, right? Everything's a cloud world. So we can go back and look at temperatures in the room. One of the things I showed there was line temperature. We put a temperature sensor on the coax so we can kind of see trends. You know, is the line starting to warm up? Are we getting ready to lose a bullet? You know, is something changing? And then what are the alarm values? Right? It's not all just forward power, reflected power, VisWar, but it's also room environment. You know, these are all things that if you knew your transmitter was room temperature was increasing a degree an hour, and you started getting alarms on your phone, you're going to go there and try to see if you can fix it. You're also going to call your HVAC mechanic to get out there. I've got a room that's heating up. It's 82, it's 83, it's 84. What am I going to do now? Now I know that my CPUs that are controlling the transmitter or the playout device, now I know that the rack temperature is always 5 degrees warmer than ambient room. So what am I doing? Where's my backup plan? Start warming up the stuff. Start testing the backup facility. These are all those little things that for us, again, it's a management decision, but if I know that something's starting to go bad, I can be a little bit proactive than reactive and hopefully avert that off-air occurrence. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what we're trying to do, is always, you know, always stay on the air. So we go through that, and I'll give you just a little bit of an example here. You can see there's a little bit of a bump. We had a temperature issue. We monitor three things. Two different transmission lines in the room temperature. So we can go through and we can actually see what the 60-day rise is. What's interesting is if you extrapolate it, it'll go down to degree by degree. You can actually see the compressor turn on and the compressor turn off, which in a data center solution, that's actually important to them. They want to see what their consumptions are for peak demand and all those things. But for the more regular broadcast side, it's just to see trends. Obviously, there was a 2 or 3 degree warm day there. So we saw it raise. But what's interesting is it's not just the building room, it's also the coax. So we also noticed that the coax also increased because the ambient room temperature increased. So it wasn't a huge event, but we were able to actually go back and look at it historically. And this is all saved, so we can go back. We can look at a year. So we've had these systems in for just about a year now. So one of the other things we talked about was the tower lifts. We were going to do some picks. Here's one in Massachusetts, just in a suburb just outside of Boston. We were going to do a pick. We had it all figured out. We own the land. We own the tower. Shouldn't be a problem. Well, as you know, the city likes to get involved in everything, don't they? And the city was like, well, that's great. You're going to do that pick. What's your fall zones? They're like, well, the tower's not going to fall. No, we want the fall zones. Well, we don't really have those calculated. So we calculated the fall zones for the city to get a permit to do this. Well, gee, that blue line, that blue circle represents a Sheraton Hotel. So guess what we got to rent for the night? We had to rent the entire hotel for a helicopter pick. So even though we own the land, but the Sheraton was, considered a risk. It's not a bad idea. It wasn't cheap. So what we did is we averted the risk. So we bought the hotel for the night and the next day, and they shut it down. And then first thing in the morning, they came with the helicopters. We had all the documentation. We didn't anticipate that. We didn't expect them to ask us to do that, but we had to do it. But again, having the plan and having the details mattered. We had another one in Florida. There's 300 mobile homes right next to the tower site. We sent them to dinner. So we sent them a late lunch, early dinner. Helicopter came, did what they had to do. We had guards to block off the areas. But that's a real thing, right? So it's like, okay, everyone want dinner and a movie? All right, let's do it. So we sent everybody dinner and a movie, put security out front. But these are the real-world examples of things that you don't expect. And we, of course, we've documented all this now. But that could just as easily be with a gin pole. New city regulations want a lot more stuff, just to make you aware. Not every tower site's in a field. Some of them are, and I didn't show those because they're boring. But these are some of the interesting stuff. So I'm down to 3 minutes, but I'll open it up for questions. Anybody got any questions? Yes, sir. Right.
The question is, you were talking about having maintenance crews come out quarterly to deal with HVAC.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is that they had to install a new unit to replace one that was 40 years old. That's fine. But it's only one unit in a building with three radio stations in it. Okay? The fallover, if the air conditioning fails, is a pull-through fan with a filter on the intake.
Yep.
The filter hasn't been replaced in like ages. It is black. Who's responsible for getting in there?
Chris Nixon. He's the regional broadcast manager for this
You
area.
Think he... Wait a minute. You're talking Wisconsin.
Yeah, he does Wisconsin.
My site is in Illinois, and I'm a good friend with the site.
He does Illinois as well.
Then my buddy is his subordinate downtown Chicago. So I will talk to him. But yeah, those filters need to be replaced because I was beginning to think I was going to have to do it and charge the company, and it's not their site.
Yeah. Again, $15 air filter, $75 for the guy to do a truck roll. Let's get it replaced. It's not the end of the world. Let's get it done. You know, obviously our goal is to be.
Well, I'll call him tomorrow.
Yeah.
And say, hey.
Well, Chris is right there, so you can holler at him during the
I'll
break.
I'll talk to him.
Or you can holler at me. It's a good question, though. Any other questions? Oh, there's one in the back.
You talked about site safety and protecting your assets. That's all fine and dandy, but what can we do to prevent these things? So I had several clients in central Minnesota that recently got hit by copper thieves, and one of them had cameras. Yes, they got caught. Yes, they're off the street. But I have a lot of people are saying, but what could we do to prevent some of these things? Is there any data about, besides the obvious lock the gates and things like that, I mean, is there any obvious data about how you can make your site less attractive to these copper thieves?
And we talked to some security. It's a good question. The short answer is no, not really. But let me give you some ideas. Hide the copper. That's not really practical. You know, people have direct burial, you know, the 6-inch copper strap out to the tower, so it's underground. My personal opinion, it's some former tower guys that know that there's some value there, right? And so they may have worked in the wireless industry or whatever. They know there's a lot of copper that's available. So it's like, okay, let's grab the copper. We can make a quick $100. You know, I always tell everybody with the cherry, with the outside grounding, put it inside, right? Lights, cameras, you know, all the good fencing, keeping everything in good repair. Infrequent visits. We had one guy that actually parked a car, and every week he'd move it just so it looked like there was activity at the site. It was an old abandoned, you know, station vehicle. Moved it to a different spot at the tower every week just so it looked like there was activity. You know, anything to make it a little bit different or uncomfortable for the bad guy, that would be the opportunity. But you know, like, we've taken most of the grounding and moved it inside. Some of the wireless folks are going to aluminum grounding blocks. You know, I don't think that's necessarily a good thing with all of the, with dissimilar metals now starting, now you've got some corrosive or insulation properties. Now you don't really have a good ground, right? So there are ways to deter it shy of having an armed guard there, right? Because that's just not cost efficient. But every time you can add a layer, add the layer. LED spotlights, you know, they're cheap. They don't consume a lot of electricity, but it could be a viable thing. So, anything else? Yeah, make it undesirable for them to take it because now they got to scrape it. All right, thank you all, appreciate it.